What is going on, Pack Nation? Thank you for tuning in and welcome back to The Sweep, brought to you by Pack to the Future, the number one place to get your Packers news. We got it all, articles, podcasts, videos, anything you need, ladies and gentlemen. So check us out at packtothefuture.com. Man, most people out there are still freaking out because that's just what people do. But I'm seeing some light at the end of this tunnel, folks, and I think more good than bad can come out of Atlanta. I do, I truly do, but we will get to that shortly. First, though, let me welcome in my co-host, Blaine Hornes. What is happening, my man?
Not a whole lot, Freddie. I'm kind of on the same boat as you are. I feel pretty good considering a loss. Lots of positive things come from the Atlanta game, so let's get started, huh?
Yes, let's get started. Let's hear what's on the docket for the night. We will first start off discussing all the different roster moves that happened this week. There's a lot that went down right after we did our last show, and all the way up until today there have been roster moves with the trade deadline. After that, we're going to go over that game like we just talked about in Atlanta, throw out our playboys and our schoolboys, and then we'll preview the Colts game, talk a little bit about that, maybe a couple players to watch for or someone that you might be able to throw into your fantasy lineup. But first, the injury report. And you know what? We skated through that game pretty decently in Atlanta, considering right before the game it felt like half our team was out. I think the main one going out of here was J.C. Treader, and he totally dodged a bullet, ladies and gentlemen. He did not injure his ACL. He actually only had a sprain in his MCL, so he shouldn't be out too long. According to his agent, Alan Herrmann, it's not going to be season ending, so he should be back pretty shortly. The other guy I wanted to touch on, Jared Cook. Man, it would be nice to see Jared Cook. Seriously. But he is not practicing this week, according to McCarthy, but he could be back sometime next week. Currently working through his rehab protocol. So I know I'm keeping my fingers crossed and throwing in a couple prayers to see him. I think he would be the extra little boost for this offense that is seeming to come together. And then lastly, Ty Montgomery, the crazy scratch right before the game, diagnosed with sickle cell trait. What?
Yeah.
That sounds intense. You know what? I had to look it up. I didn't even know what it was. But, you know, it seems to be something that he knew about. It seems to be something that you can definitely keep under control. It's not anything to freak out about, I don't think, necessarily. But, you know, it's an intense thing. The person who has it can experience heat stroke, muscle breakdown, you know, things like that when they're doing intense exercising, stuff like that. That's my WebMD for you, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't recall, the Steelers safety, Ryan Clark, he actually had it. He had his spleen and his gallbladder removed after playing in Denver because of Denver's, mile high lifestyle?
Altitude. Yeah, I mean, there's been a number of different players over the years that you hear about it, usually when they play in Denver. There's been a few players, I think, that have sat out games in Denver because of it.
Yes.
But otherwise, usually don't experience a whole lot of issue. I think the biggest thing with Ty was that it's fairly new, and I think there were some symptoms that he hadn't experienced before. Like you said, I think he was aware of the situation going into a couple of weeks ago already, but they weren't sure. They did some testing and he had some other symptoms and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting going forward to see how they treat it in the future and other games coming up. But I don't anticipate it being a major issue for him going forward.
Yeah, Montgomery said, per Rob Domofsky, that the condition should not be career-threatening or season-threatening. So he expects to play on Sunday. That's what Montgomery said. So I guess
they made it sound like, or McCarthy made it sound like in his press conference today, that if it was up to Montgomery, he would have played last week. And Green Bay is going back to their overly cautious approach with some of their guys now. I think they may have learned a little bit of a lesson with Eddie and the predicament they're putting themselves in now with the running back position. But it's very interesting to see how they're handling some more of these injuries going forward after that.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how many more running backs we can lose if we're actually losing the wide receiver who was playing running back. I mean, how many more can get sick or hurt? It blows my mind. Which brings me to my next point, the roster moves that happen. I got to come out right off the bat here, and I think I owe everyone a little bit of an apology, maybe, I don't know. But I'm going to start with, you know, just the absolute great feeling that you have as a podcast host when you go on your first little rant of your show and talk about how dare you think that Jared Aberdares would get cut and you guys need to chill out and blah blah blah, and here's a little clip of it.
If he was gonna get cut, this would have been the opportunity for him to go, but obviously he's not.
So yeah, it's just one of those things that I got a little excited about, and then I woke up the next day, and lo and behold, Jared Aberdares gets cut. So I guess I kind of jumped the gun on that one. Apologize to the fans, because I look like a dum-dum. But you know what? Abracadabra put on waivers. He cleared waivers. He's still a free agent. I don't know where he's going to end up, but I think we should pour one out for my man, Abracadabra. And for one last time, possibly, let's just hear it.
Condolences, Freddie.
Thank you. It was a rough day. You know, a lot of people sent me messages actually saying, are you all right? And it was tough. It was very tough. But besides that, let's move past that because that was my embarrassing moment. We also got Nile Davis, you know, the big exciting trade that Ted Thompson made. Comes in, has 5 carries, 5 yards, and he is already released. And even before he was practically done being released, he was picked up today by the Jets on waivers. Good move. I mean, was it smart to get rid of him and keep that draft pick? I mean, do you feel like we gave him enough time?
I mean, as far as his usage, yeah. I mean, if we're not going to use him, why lose a pick? And here's another interesting tidbit. I actually was talking to one of my buddies, Eric Bramer, and he brought up an interesting point to me prior to the Jets picking him up this afternoon, that if he clears waivers, there's a possibility they bring him back, and Ted looks like a genius because he got a running back without giving up a draft pick. So the potential was there to release him, let him clear waivers, and then bring him back if we needed him. I think they were willing to take that risk just because it hadn't impacted anything in the immediate future. I don't know the exact timetable on getting Starks back, but we've been okay without a running back. And Don Jackson, hopefully he can stay healthy the next couple of weeks. He's done enough. Aaron Ripkowski's shown against Atlanta that he's capable of carrying the ball and getting a chunk here and a chunk there and at least 1 to 2 yards every time, which is encouraging. He reminds me a little bit of the old man Coon that we let go, which is nice to see. And you know what? As far as the running back position goes as a whole, it doesn't seem to matter who we put back there. We can put Cobb back there. We can put Monty back there. We can put Adams was back there a few times this last week and didn't look terrible coming out of the backfield. It's a position. I know we've talked about it in the past. The running back position is a dying breed.
Thank you.
Usually teams have two because you can't just use one. And the Packers are choosing to have one and use multiple other bodies that can do multiple other things besides play running back, which is, in my book, really, really smart.
It is. And you know what? If he would have gotten signed back on the practice squad, we would have spent probably 20 minutes talking about how Ted Thompson is a genius on this show because it is my show, and that's how it's going to go down.
It would have been the most won-over, crazy F you to the Chiefs, you guys are stupid, in the history of the NFL.
I mean, would have.
It's not a huge name and it's not a huge acquisition, no. But to be able to pull something like that off would have been epic. It didn't happen. You know what? And you know, if I don't know that he's going to fit in New York because they have Forte and Belil Powell. So yeah. He could go there for 2 weeks and get cut and still have a chance to end up back in Green Bay.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think you touched on another point that I was going to bring up, and that is that the times, they are changing. And let's be honest, the running back position is a dying breed. You don't see it anymore. Okay, Ezekiel Elliott is probably, what, the last true real deal running back to come out since, what, Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, well, since, I mean, as far as top tier 100%
A 25 one, a carry type running back.
Yeah, I mean, you have the Melvin Gordons and then the Devontae Freemans and some of the guys that...
Todd Gurley.
But you don't have the Adrian Peterson and Ezekiel Elliott that comes around once every 10 years. And right. Only one team can have them. And yep. You know what? The Zeke thing, we will see if he can stand the test of time, because the amount of carries and touches that man is getting at the rate he's getting them is unbelievable. And we already saw one running back in Dallas do that for a year, and they know. They got rid of him the next year. Yep. Now Murray's having kind of a resurgent, but Zeke Elliott's going to be there for 4 years. We'll see what he has left in the tank after his rookie contract is up.
I don't see him having anything left in his tank after his rookie contract, to be dead honest with you.
It's going to be tough, man. I mean, he's on pace for over 300 touches. That's a lot of mileage.
That's what we talked about the other week with the Eddie Lacy thing, and I brought it up in saying, that's what you do. You draft a running back, you run his ass until he can't run anymore, and you get rid of him. Yep. There's no reason to give these guys a second contract. It's just not worth it. They don't have that. They don't. Running backs today, you get basically 4 years tops with them. And that's going to be their first 4 years. If not, it's going to be their first two, and then maybe another one or two wait down the road when they just have this weird resurgence because they went to a different team. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's not a huge thing for us, Nile Davis. You know, I wish you the best of luck. I don't think it fit. I think we're seeing that it's just as easy almost to plug anybody else in there with what we have weapon-wise and just see what happens. But we'll move on to the next guy, a guy that I actually I love, totally under the radar kind of guy, but a great locker room, great leader, Chris Banjo. Got kind of the same move as Abracadabra. He got cut, given the settlement, the injury settlement, sent to waivers. Just a dynamite special teamer, coach to the younger guys, just a smart guy. So I hope that he clears waivers and we bring him back on the practice squad, because I think he's an important part to the organization and to Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the Jarrett Bush treatment. Jarrett Bush was kind of a joke for a while, but he was very solid on special teams, and that's exactly what Chris Banjo was. He was a great special teams guy and could come in and play some safety in a spot situation if a guy went down for a half of a game or a game or two here and there. Obviously, his injury past is a concern, and I think Ted has learned that 2 to 3 years of injury history is kind of his limit, and he's going to let those guys go.
Yep.
You can only give those guys so many chances, and injuries are unfortunate, but they're part of the game, and it's the business. I think Ted on Abby and Banjo is doing the right thing. It might not be a fan favorite move, but it's the smart move. And like you said, if everything goes well and the injury settlement that they had after those weeks are done and his injury has passed and healed, maybe they bring him back, maybe they don't. We'll see where we're at as far as depth goes in the defensive backfield when that time comes. But I definitely wouldn't rule out either one of those two being back in Green Bay, if not this year, definitely for camp next year if they don't get picked up before then.
I think they'll definitely be back, probably both. I think the fact that Eberderis hasn't been picked up yet is interesting and kind of a show sell that he'll be back.
I don't know if the injury settlement ever goes public, but if it's a 4 or 5 week injury, why would somebody pick up somebody who can't play for 4 or 5 weeks?
Exactly.
So, exactly. I mean, it's all relative to the situation of the player, in which none of us have the details of. So, it 4 or 5 weeks from now, we'll see. Once teams start finalizing their playoff rosters and stuff, that's where it's really going to be interesting. Because that's down the stretch here, once teams are past their bye, I mean, half the league now, after this next coming week, I think half the league has had their bye. So everybody's going to be in a long stretch of games here where people don't get weeks off to recoup and get their bodies healthy. And that's when you're going to see some of these higher profile free agents get picked up and latch onto a team and possibly get their resurgence. And that maybe that's what Abby and Banjo get. Like you said, for Niall Davis, you wish them the best. It's a business and they'll land on their feet somewhere. They're too good of players to not be at least on a practice squad. So good luck to them and good riddance, I guess. It is what it is.
Yes, sir. Speaking of resurgence, let's get into the game in Atlanta. Like I said, when we opened up the show, a lot of people still concerned. A lot of people still calling out names. We got a lot of fire capers going on. You know, we got a lot of this, a lot of that. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I was terrified going into that game with how many people we had on the injury list to go into a game like that against the number one offense and to be able to battle with them back and forth. You know what? It's a victory in a sense to me. You know, I know it's not a W in the long run, but to me, I felt like, hey, this is closer than I'd expected. I saw some great things from our offense. I saw some things that from our defense that were a little concerning. But again, going against the number one offense, I can't expect, you know, perfection. So there were some good things. I was excited about it. Obviously, like I said, a loss is a loss, and that's a bummer, and I don't want to see it all the time. But I feel like more good came out of it than bad. What do you think?
My stance is pretty close to that. I'm probably erring on the more side of caution as far as the big picture. Immediately, you look at that game, and if you watched every play, you're thinking to yourself, okay, we gave up one play over 20 yards on defense. So they were an efficient offense, getting short yardage plays, converting on third down. That sucks. We shut down Julio Jones. We kind of sold out on that idea, which I was against. Kind of going to toot my own horn here. And
toot, toot.
I believe I gave out a stat line that in two of their bigger wins in the year, Julio Jones was non-existent. That points to the fact that there are other players on that team. It points to the fact that Matt Ryan is having a comeback season like we don't see very often. Mohamed Sanu is a very capable number two wide receiver. Devonta Freeman is very good out of the backfield. They have a very good young tight end who kind of tore up the middle of the field on us against our shake and bake middle linebackers. He's a rookie. Matt Ryan is taking what the defenses are giving him. He's marching down the field with high efficiency offense, taking exactly what he needs when he needs it. The offensive line for Atlanta is vastly improved. We didn't blitz a whole lot, which was another key that we talked about. We needed to get pressure on Matty Ice early and often to rattle him and get him out of his rhythm a little bit, and we couldn't do it with our front four. But yeah, the sellout on Julio Jones and letting everybody else tear us up is kind of what bit us. I would have rather had seen them let Julio get 8 to 10 catches for 110 yards and a score instead of shutting him down and just letting everybody else torch us with underneath throws and 8, 9-yard routes and dump offs to the running backs. But that's just me. They chose to not pressure Matty Ice and sell out to Julio, and that's what you get in return. Overall, defensively, the defensive backfield, for the most part, with the challenges that they were given, did okay. I think down the stretch on the final drive for Atlanta, we had two huge opportunities to create turnovers. Gunter had a possible pick six. Would have been a great pick if he had caught it. He had an open field in front of him. I'm not saying that's a for sure thing, but those are the types of plays that decide games. And we had zero turnovers, which is huge on offense, but we also didn't turn them over at all, which needs to be an improvement on our defense. I know our run defense has been solid over the course of the season, But we need to create turnovers, and that's what we need, especially against the number one offense in the league.
I think that's our biggest flaw right now, is our lack of turnovers that we're creating.
We're minus two on the season.
And that's terrible. And it's not that we haven't had the chances. I mean, I've seen balls bounce off of our defenders' hands left and right. And we have to take those chances when they're given to you, because they might just be that one chance in the game. And that one chance could have turned that whole game around.
Right. Well, and then there was another one where Gunther had perfect coverage on Julio Jones. Matty Ice tried to fit it in a tight window. I think Gunther tipped it, went through Julio's hands, and Haha was right there.
Yes.
And again, it would have been a tough pick. It would have been a tough play. I understand that. But those are the types of plays that put you over the top against the number one offense on the road, a playoff team. I mean, those are the plays that we need to have. That's the difference between winning and losing a one-point game and being a championship-quality team and just being a one-and-done in a playoff team.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that our offense finally stepped up. I think our offense finally got to the point where we wanted them to get. Our defense, some say, didn't look good, they were terrible, blah, blah, blah. Number one offense, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, they weren't terrible, but they didn't make... They needed one or two big plays to go our way, and they didn't.
And that's the thing. You know, football is more than just offense and defense straight up. I mean, turnovers are a big part of the game. Special teams are a part of the game. And we needed a turnover, and that would have changed the entire game. I think we played exactly like we should have for the most part, just lack that turnover. I think that would have made the biggest difference. So it's unfortunate. On that level, I think that for the most part, we got to see a lot of fun, different things that we're excited about. The formations were interesting. Davante Adams coming out of the backfield was interesting. There was one time he motioned out of the backfield and went into trips. That was awesome to see. It seemed like there's some new things going on. At one point, I was watching the game, and my cousin looked over and was like, is that Adams in the backfield? And I was like, no way. But it was, and I think it's interesting. And I feel, and this is crazy, and it's maybe bold, and you're maybe going to be like, what are you talking about? But I feel like all of this is the beginning of this crazy new experiment that we're going to have as an offense. And it could change the game. I mean, it could totally change the whole game. The fact that we put Montgomery back there was the first initial part, and that's strange, but now we're seeing the success of putting Cobb, Montgomery, Adams. You know, maybe we just keep rotating that craziness, bringing Trevor Davis. Ripkowski leads the team.
Why does it take so long to figure that out?
That's
my question for you, Fred. Why? I understand that he's fairly new to the team. It's his second year, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. He's big. He's athletic. He's strong. He doesn't have ball security issues on any front so far that we've seen. Why has he not been implemented into this sooner?
It beats me. You know, because when you look at it, when you really look at it, he brings to the table damn near just as much as Eddie Lacy does, if you think about it.
Maybe more, because it's an unknown factor. You're not expecting the big freaking 6'3 white dude in the backfield to get the ball.
Right. And why not give him the ball, pound it, pound it, pound it, and then use your Montgomery or someone to be your scat back type back.
Right. And I'm not saying give the ball to Ripkowski 20 times a game.
No, I know.
I'm saying 8 to 12 a game is probably about where you need to be. Mix in Rodgers scrambling, by the way.
Ooh.
I'll toot my horn on that one, too.
You deserve it.
It takes away the man coverage.
I agree.
I mean, it opens up the field. And you know what? If they want to continue to play man on it, then Rodgers is going to get you to 60, 70 yards scrambling. And I think he hit I think he hit my target for him. I always say 7 to 10 carries, scrambles, whatever you want to call them out of Rodgers. And I think he had 8. 8 for like 64 yards. He's the leading rusher on the team.
Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
We got 6 for 60.
Okay, so I was...
Close enough.
I mean, he's right there.
Right.
And, I mean, that's the thing is it opens up... It takes a guy... If they don't want to do it, then he's going to keep tearing them up. And they're either going to have to put a spy on them or they're going to have to play zone. And if you play zone, you saw what happened when they played zone in the first half. Rodgers tore them apart.
Exactly. And you know what? I feel like when we watch this game, I didn't text you pretty much the whole freaking game, but the whole time, all I kept thinking was, this is everything we've talked about.
Right?
This is everything we've talked about. Rodgers running, using these different receivers, just everything we pretty much had been mentioning over the last couple weeks, they finally used. And why it took so long, I don't know.
But you know what? You know who I'm gonna give credit to? I've been highly critical of him pretty much until last week. And this is why he still has the good coach quality coming from me. And I'll add that I have said that. I still think he's a great coach. I just was on the fence about whether he was wearing out his time in Green Bay. But Mike McCarthy seems to do so much better when he's faced with adversity.
Yes.
When he gets comfortable with his offense and his playmakers, he is just way too predictable. And when he gets faced with a little bit of adversity and has to think outside of that box, outside of that giant playbook that he's got, it just adds a whole nother element to his coaching style. And him being able to utilize some of the skill sets that some of these other guys have, finding them and using them the way that they should have been used all along. It's frustrating to me that it took so long, but it's also telling me that Mike McCarthy is part genius in the same breath because of what he's doing with so little as far as names go. Now, he has a history of it, and it's awesome. Why does it take this long? It shouldn't take a season and a half to figure out that you have other guys and you have the ability to coach these guys and put them in better positions. And if he can continue that the rest of the year, the Green Bay Packers are going to be a very tough out. I mean, they're putting themselves kind of behind the eight ball a little bit in the playoff race, and we can get into that a little bit later, but it's very, very encouraging to see that McCarthy is finally using the tools that he has the proper way and figuring out ways to get the ball out quicker, get guys open against certain schemes, and just switch up the formations and the plays and confuse defenses a little bit.
I hear you. I think you just called Mike McCarthy a genius.
I did. You know what? It's not my criticisms on him aren't that he's a terrible coach.
No, I know.
Because he's not.
I know.
He's definitely not. And I don't love him, but I don't hate him. I'm still on the fence. I'm leaning a little bit more towards him probably being able to keep his job, but we still have half a season to go.
He's kind of like that sibling or that son or daughter you have that you know has all his potential, but you're just not seeing him use it, and it's just frustrating to you.
Yeah. I mean, you'll love him forever because he brought us a Super Bowl and he's had a lot of success, but you know he can be so much better.
Yes. So we're not mad at you, McCarthy. We don't hate you. We're just disappointed.
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
You son of a bitch. All right. Let's. With that being said, let's go right into Playboy. And Schoolboy.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber.
You suck, you jackass.
Oh, hell no.
You blew it! You done fucked up now!
Why don't you take this one, Freddy? I'll let you go first this week.
This is going to be me kind of tooting my horn. I got one toot. They call me Freddy Tutu. One toot for the week. And my playboy is Trevor Davis. And let me tell you why. Because last week I said, it's time we bring some speed into this game. And what do? We bring in Trevor Davis. I think this was the emergence of something beautiful for Trevor Davis. I think that Trevor Davis has a DeSean Jackson mentality type to him. Maybe mentality is a bad word because DeSean Jackson's kind of a thug. But the same type, the same speed, the same quickness, the same ability. Now he's raw. He still has obviously some things to work on. But I think it was exciting to see him out there. Exciting to see him running routes. He got his first touchdown. That takes a ton of pressure off of any player out there. And then the punt return. I mean, that's what we all expected from the get-go. So I think that this could be someone that we could definitely see going into later into the season being kind of that playmaker guy. You know, I don't see him right now as being a 9-catch, 120-yard guy, but I could see him being like a 3-catch, 100-yard guy with one catch for 70 yards. You know,
the one or two catches that he has in the game being game changers.
Absolutely. So yes. With that being said, my playboy, Trevor Davis, baby.
I couldn't agree with it more. I mean, it's not a bad pick. I'll give you that much. My playboy for the week, on the other hand, is going to be Aaron Rutkowski. I love the guy. He's been one of my top favorite players since he's been drafted. It might be the big white fullback I see myself in him type deal, and the reason why I like him so much. But I think that he has a skill set that goes unnoticed and unappreciated, and it was finally showcased a little bit last week. And like I said earlier, I don't ever expect him to be the bell cow, but he needs to have a couple of touches every game just to keep the defenses honest. He can get you that 1 to 2 yards damn near every time. He showed the explosive ability that if he can get to the second level, he's going to run a guy over. And he's going to move that pile for an extra yard or two at least with a couple of the big boys helping him out. It was encouraging to see. It was fun to see. I was happy to see it. I hope we see more of it in the future. It excites me, and that's why he's my playboy.
Rip, 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 rip.
There's got to be a way to get a Coon-type chant for him because it has to happen. We need to tell the defense every time on the goal line when he's going to get the ball.
Yes. So is it rip, rip, rip? Or is it everyone saying, ski?
It's going to be interesting to find out, but I guarantee Lambeau figures it out sooner or later.
They better. Hopefully quicker than McCarthy does. All right. I'm going to hit up Schoolboy because I have more than just one. I guess it's more than one because I'm going to go with the tight ends as a group.
So it's two.
It's two. So it's, yeah, I guess it's two. It's two.
You got Rodgers and Perillo.
Yeah, two and a gimpy Cook. But where are they? What happened to the tight? I thought the tight end position was like the hottest thing in the game right now, and we don't have one. I mean, Richard Rodgers got 26 snaps. Perillo had 3 snaps, no catches. I don't even know if they even had any targets, let alone.
I think Rodgers might have had one.
One, okay. Well, Lottie frickin' die.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Seriously, it brings me back to my point earlier about I can't wait for Jared Cook to come back because, you know, and truth be told, I'll come out and say it. I have been backing up Richard Rodgers for the last couple months, for almost the last year pretty much. You know, saying, oh, he's great, he's good, he's lost weight, he's a great possession guy, he's really, you know, and you know what, he's a good possession, he's got good hands, but his ass doesn't get open.
Well, and you know what's the most discouraging part about that whole deal is that Atlanta in the first half played strictly zone, and yes. That's what Richard Rodgers is built for. Find a hole in the zone, sit your fat ass in it, catch the ball and go down.
And he couldn't
do it. You would think that the first half would have been tailor-made for this guy to go off for 6-7 catches in the first half, 70 yards. But he was non-existent. He can't separate off the line of scrimmage from a linebacker. And if you can't do that, you're never going to get open in the NFL.
No, and I think that's my biggest concern is that if he can't do it against the easiest, if he can't do it against Atlanta's 31st ranked defense playing zone, what in the world is going to happen when we go against anyone else? I mean, it's just too concerning.
I think you take him off the field. You put one of them other young wide receivers on.
You got to. That's, you know what? Maybe Ted should have kept 7 wide receivers. Maybe that was a reason for it. Maybe he knew that all the running backs were going to suck. He knew that we wouldn't have shit for tight ends. So, again, Jared Cook, whenever you feel like you want to come back and start playing, which it could be next week, I'll be more than happy to be like there to give you a high five when you go on the field because I'm excited. I think, you know, and I'll be true about something else. I was never that pumped about Jared Cook signing in the first place. I didn't really know what he necessarily brought, but at this point, I'm willing to try anything. I mean, because I don't see any production by any of our tight ends. I mean, put Janice at tight end, for gosh sakes. I wouldn't even care. Just to see somebody.
I don't want to get ahead of myself and say I don't think we're going to need a tight end presence against the Colts because their defense is god-awful.
Yes.
And I guess I don't really know a whole lot about Tennessee yet because I haven't focused on them at all to this point.
We will.
I don't know that we'll need them there either. I think it's realistic and probably the way that the Packers are going to play it to try to get him back and ready and 100% healthy for the Washington game.
Yep, I agree.
And you know what? Get him healthy. Don't bring him back a week early and have him re-aggravate the ankle. I had heard earlier in the year that it was a possible situation, kind of like Ty Montgomery, that they don't think he can hurt it any worse. It was kind of a pain tolerance thing, and regardless of what happens, it was going to require surgery in the offseason. I'm glad to hear that some of that talk has died down, and it's not as bad as what they originally had thought. I think it's probably still going to require some cleanup surgery at the end of the year, but some of the pain has kind of subsided, and they see him coming back to be closer to 100% than they originally thought. So that's encouraging, but I think they should err on the side of caution, give him 2 more weeks, and get him ready for Washington, and then hopefully he can stay healthy the rest of the year. But I agree with you, the tight end position has been ugly.
It's been awful, and you know what? You gotta keep him off. You gotta let him get healthy. And just to preview what we're about to talk about, I should say, in the near future here, is the way we're playing right now, with as how many injuries we have. Just think about what we're gonna be like when these guys start coming back. Just think about that. Let's hear your schoolboy though first.
My schoolboy is very similar to yours. It's not a single guy. It's kind of a group. Really two position groups lumped into one. I'm going to go with the front four of the defense, the interior defensive line of Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark, along with the outside linebackers group, including Clay Matthews. We needed them to come up big in a couple of key spots yesterday, including early in the game and late in the game, and they were just not there. We had 2 sacks. That's fine and great. I'm going to call 2 of them, the 2 that we got, both coverage sacks. If we were going to sell out on covering Julio and doubling him the whole game, we needed pressure from 4 without the blitz, and we just couldn't do it. I think Clay Matthews not playing and his lingering hamstring issue is starting to get tiring.
Yes.
I know in the last 2 years, that's the first game he's missed, but over the course of his career, he's missed a lot of games, and he's getting paid a lot of money.
Yep.
If you're too big and too strong and too muscular that you can't keep your hamstring healthy for more than 8 weeks of a season, there's something going on there that needs to be addressed. And it pains me to say this, but they got to think about possibly letting him go.
Or he's got to take a pay cut coming in.
And he's not going to, he won't do it. Why would he? He can go somewhere else. The Washington Redskins will pay him probably more than he's getting paid in Green Bay. You know, I mean, he's not going to take a pay cut. If he does, that would surprise me. But I just don't know how many more years Green Bay can continue to pay this guy the $11 to $12 million. I think we talked about it last week. That was the 13, even worse. Yeah. $13 million a year can be spent in so many other areas of need in depth.
Right.
Especially when we have a Perry coming up for contract at the end of this year. Give some of that money to him.
What does Peppers make this year?
13, I think. 12 or 13, he's up there too.
No, I don't know if he's at 12 or 13. But I think that between Peppers...
I think you're right. I think the last year was 10. I think the last couple of years were in the 12 range.
I want to say that it was like 8 or 9 at the last year.
And you could be right. Because all I know is it's a shit ton for a guy that plays half the snaps.
Okay, so he'll be at 10.5 this year. Okay. Total cap hit. So we got 10.5 and 13. So we got $23.5 million in both of our outside linebackers.
respectively. And, I mean, he's a DN outside linebacker, if you will. But
and you know
that's a lot of money.
If they're playing at a high level and producing, that's great. And I know they're trying they're easing Peppers in like they did last year. Peppers had a resurgence there at the end of the year where we needed him the most, and that's fine.
And that's what he should do this year.
If that happens, great. My thing is Clay is relatively, he's not young, but he's not Julius Peppers old either.
No.
He's continually battling with this hamstring injury, and it's becoming annoying as a fan. Every week, you just never know if he's going to play. He doesn't practice. And every camp, he's sitting out for 3 or 4 weeks during camp. And I'm just so over how good he's been compared to the lingering questions with the hamstring. I think it at least has to be in the discussion of moving on from Clay Matthews at the end of the year. And that's a bold statement because he is a Pro Bowler. He's played for Green Bay at a very high level for a long time. But at some point, Ted does what he does and cuts ties, and I wouldn't be surprised by that at all.
Yeah, and it's, again, it is one of those things that it's not going to ever sit well with the fans, and everyone's going to freak out, and oh my gosh. But it's a lot of money, like you said, and for someone to always, you never know when he's going to be playing anymore. And it's just, it's hard to continuously see him on the sidelines. And you know what, to be totally fair, a lot of people that I've talked to have sided on that side of, gosh, I feel like I see him on the sidelines more than I see him in the game.
Which is crazy to think about because I looked at it and it's the first game he's missed since 2013.
Which is weird. You just said that before, and I actually was going to be like, nah, no way. Yep. Can't possibly be true.
It's true. I would not make that up, and I debated with a couple of my other buddies the last couple of weeks about it because they've been chirping in my ear about it's time. Clay's got to go. We're paying him too much money, and they're selling me on it. And I've tried to argue it based off the fact that he's played every game since 2013, and the more and more I look at it, it's just, it's not the fact that he's not playing, because he is. It's the fact that it's just annoying to have to wonder every week. And then when he does play, and when I say he's played, that means he started the game. How many games over the last 3 years since 2013 has he not played in the fourth quarter on key drives because his hamstring's acting up? I can count two or three games this year already, one against the Minnesota Vikings in a key fourth quarter drive that we needed to get the ball back, and he wasn't anywhere to be found, and there was no update on the telecast. There's nothing. And everybody's wondering, where the hell's Clay? Where the hell's Clay? Well, obviously his hamstring's hurting him.
Right. Maybe do less squats with huge salmon and Sasquatch and eat beef jerky and get your ass in the freaking weight room and start getting in shape, you turd. Because I'm sick of paying you this much money. But, you know, we about money and cap hits all day. Let's move on. Let's hit up the Indianapolis Colts real quick. I don't think there's a whole lot really to talk about. The guys at Pact of the Future are going to definitely hit on it later on this week. So make sure you guys tune in and check out PactOfTheFuture.com for their take on what's going to happen in Indianapolis. Why don't you tell me what you think, and then maybe you give me someone to watch for, or for someone should start in someone's fantasy league, or whatever you might think is going to happen in Green Bay this weekend.
Oh, much of the same as last week, I think. Freddie, I mean, the Colts, they have the potential to be an explosive offense. Unfortunately, I don't see their offensive line as improved as Atlanta's has been. They also don't have Matt Ryan playing quarterback, who is completely on fire. Andrew Luck definitely has the capability to ignite a fire. I just don't think that his offensive line can hold up against our defensive line. Hopefully somebody gets wind of me calling them out and they can get some pressure with four. Also think that Dom Capers is going to dial up some blitzes this week. I don't think they don't have a Julio Jones per se. They do have T.Y. Hilton, who is a speedy guy. But he doesn't threaten you like Julio does as far as go up and get it type of player. He's more of a speedster type possession guy. I think they are going to double him from time to time, but I also think that they'll scale back on that and play a little man-to-man. I also think you can't rule out Frank Gore. Yes, he's old, but he's one of the most durable key guys on their team, and he just always seems to show up and get a score. The only reason I know that is on my fantasy team, yes. I
knew that was going to be said, you son of a...
But no, seriously, I mean, he's very durable. He's always there. He always has a couple of games every year where it just looks like he's running on empty, and then all of a sudden, boom, he shows he's got a little left in the tank. I hope it's not against us. I don't think it'll be against us. But I think the guy to watch, if T.Y. goes off and has a huge game, that's what concerns me the most. But I just don't see it. I think we're going to knock Andrew Luck around. He can take a beating, but he doesn't like it, as nobody would, especially if the Rhino Mike Daniels gets after him and lays into him early. Hopefully Clay is back and can resurge himself into the picture a little bit and quiet me. That's always my hope when I call somebody out. But yeah, I think the key is if you shut T.Y. down and put pressure on Andrew Luck, just like kind of we talked about with Atlanta, that's going to be the key.
All right, prediction, what do you got?
I got Green Bay 27-13.
Okay, I like that. I'm going to say right now that our defensive front after last week and the Rhino, thank you for saying the Rhino, I appreciate that, that they will tear Andrew Luck apart. And I'm going to say for my prediction for the game, I'm going to say 34-17. And I'm going to throw in a bonus, and I'm going to say that Kyler Frackrell has another sack, because that's how I roll. But I think, you know, they're going to have a hard time. Their offensive line is terrible, and those defensive linemen on our team are hungry after last week. So it should be interesting to see if Andrew Luck gets time, he's concerning, but I don't see him getting much time. So yeah, if you gotta look for somebody to play or start off of either the Packers or the Colts, I would say maybe look to play the Packers defense. You know, maybe see a resurgence of them in the sense of getting a turnover and getting a lot of sacks. So that might be a sneaky pick. So mark that down. See, that's what I think was gonna happen with the Colts.
So one thing I want to touch on here, Freddie, is we're getting close to the halfway point. A lot of teams have played 8 games, some have played 7. I want to look at the NFC North a little bit and how you see it playing out here. Looking at a couple of the contenders' schedules as far as Green Bay and the Vikings, and you can throw the Lions in there too because they're right there nipping at everybody's heels. I think it's safe to say that Chicago is, they're not mathematically eliminated, but let's be honest, Jay Cutler is not going to resurge that team and bring them back to the playoffs. Are they a team that you can take lightly? I don't think so, but ultimately I don't think they have a chance in hell. But the way I see it right now is Green Bay is looking at, really, their schedule looks fairly easy and then tough and then maybe gets a little bit lighter again. I could see them going anywhere from 9-7 to 11-5. There's some toss-up games in there. I mean, I think there's some games that you just expect them to win. I know it's the NFL and nothing is guaranteed, but I'm going to say they beat the Colts. I'm going to say they beat the Titans. I'm going to say they win a close one at Washington. I'm going to say the Eagles is a toss-up game. The Texans, I think they win that one at home. Seattle, toss-up game. I think they take care of Chicago in Chicago. I believe they'll beat the Vikings at home, and then the Lions at the Lions is another toss-up game for me. So with that being said, I have the Lions a toss-up, Seattle a toss-up, and the Eagles a toss-up. Let's say they would lose those three toss-up games in my scenario. That puts them at 10-6. Is that enough to get them in the playoffs and or win the division?
I don't know if it's enough to win the division. I don't know yet. Getting into the playoffs, I think that's a possibility for sure.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at the Vikings schedule right now.
Yep.
And they have four games left in the division, which no division game is chalked up to be a win automatically. All the division games are tough. So I'll give them four toss-up games just in the division. And then a couple other games that I see as toss-ups are the Cowboys and the Cardinals. The Cardinals are kind of a wishy-washy team. You never know what you're going to get out of them. But the way I see it going
the Cardinals have got to figure it out at some point.
Right.
And there's too much talent on that team to not be good.
And the way that you see the Vikings playing the last 2 weeks, I mean, they just lost to the Bears. And I don't know if that's the Bears being better or if that's the Vikings just looking bad for 2 weeks in a row.
Right. And you know what? I think that there's a little bit of a formula that's been figured out. And just to getting to Sam Bradford, and if anyone's going to be able to get to Sam Bradford, it's Arizona. And with those, they got such good DBs. I don't see them being able to win.
Well, and they can't run the ball.
Nope.
Sam Bradford gets pressured. He doesn't move well outside the pocket.
Nope.
So all you have to do is contain him. And to be honest, as good as their defense has been this year, they're banged up. And yep. the Bears kind of tore him up a little bit on the ground.
And they Minnesota lost another tackle too.
Right. They didn't make any big trade moves for Joe Thomas or anybody else today, which I can't believe it. I mean, that's their weakness, and I thought they were definitely going to go after somebody.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So the Vikings definitely at 5-2 aren't as scary as they were 2 weeks ago. I mean, everybody's talking, oh, they have a defense to make a Super Bowl run, and it doesn't really matter what their offense does because their defense is so good. Well, the Eagles and the Bears have kind of shown, I mean, 21 and 20 points against one of the best defenses in the league, respectively. It's kind of a big deal.
Yes.
I mean, if Green Bay scores 20 points against them, they win.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I see the fact that there's 6 games that are at least toss-ups, if not losses, for the Vikings, that they could potentially end up with 6-8 losses. Yeah. And if that happens, that bodes well for Green Bay as far as playoffs go. But I could also see them, I really don't see them winning less than 10 games. I see the Vikings finishing the season at 10-6. Now, the fact that Green Bay has lost to Atlanta and Dallas is not good because they're NFC opponents, and I think that's the tiebreaker after head-to-head, and if Green Bay would beat the Vikings, that's what it would come down to. But I think obviously there's a half a season to play and there's a lot to be said, but I thought the midpoint of the season was a good time to look at that. How do you see it shaping out? I mean, I don't want to discredit the Lions, but I'm just assuming that they'll fall off per usual.
I put up each team, Chicago, I have them kind of ending at like 4-12, you know, and that's probably being generous in a sense. I have Detroit at 7-10. They are playing good. I will give them that. But they still have to play at Minnesota. They have to play at New Orleans. They have to play at New York Giants. They have to play at Dallas. They have to play in Green Bay. Or Green Bay comes to Detroit, I'm sorry. That's a lot of tough games, man. And these are the teams that are going to find their rhythm again come December. And these are teams that are used to that. You know, the Giants and play Dallas. And these teams that have been there. So props to what they're doing now, I guess, for Detroit. But I don't see them holding on in the long run. As for the Minnesota and Green Bay, you know, this is something that I've talked about a few times to you, and a lot of other people. And it's starting to bode more and more with me each and every day. Is that it's really cool for Minnesota that they went 5-0. It's not. No one really cares. But they got hot early, and I don't see that lasting. I'm a little okay with us stumbling early on. We're starting to slowly find our rhythm, and we got all those guys coming back. And I think that we're going to get hot when we need to get hot, and I think that's what bodes well for this team, this Packer team. Now, as for schedule, I got them beating Indianapolis. I got them beating Tennessee. I think we take one win out of either Washington or Philadelphia. I think we lose one or the other on that one. Just because that's the end of the road games, and they're tough, and Washington's got payback. So I think we lose one of those. We can beat Houston. Seattle's going to be tough. We beat Chicago. I think we beat Minnesota,
And, you know, Detroit at the end of the year won't probably be as easy as we all think it will be, but I have us finishing 11-5. That's being kind of excited, but I think it's a 10-6, 11-5 season. I have Minnesota at 10-6 as well. You know, I think that they lose to Arizona. I think they could lose at Washington. They could lose to Dallas, and they could lose at Green Bay.
I think the big ones there are we really want them to lose to Washington and Dallas and yes. Arizona, really.
Yep.
We need them to lose 3 NFC games and maybe a division game.
And they will, you know, because they are the Vikings.
Well, yeah, and they already lost one division game, not yes. against Green Bay. So that bodes well for tie-breaking scenarios. But the Redskins... and the Seattle game, or no, they don't play Seattle. The Redskins and the Cowboys games, I think, are yeah. big ones that we need.
Arizona as well. Arizona's yeah. NFC. So, yeah, I think it's going to be it'll be interesting. And for us to sit here and think we're going to know how it's going to work out is never going to be the case because it always is different. We're going to, you know, the fact that Chicago beat Minnesota, no one thought that was going to happen. So. Right. I mean, the one cool thing, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because you know what? We're going to revisit this every week going forward on this show. We'll take another look at it next week and see where everything kind of shapes up. But, you know, Green Bay's got to do what they got to do. You know, keep playing, get some guys back, and control our own destiny kind of shit. You know, I mean, that's what it is.
Right. And I hate to say it, but this last week against Atlanta, it's going to suck if we get to the end of the year and we look back and we say to ourselves, damn, that one point loss in Atlanta is, you know, you don't want to look back and look at week seven
yeah.
or week eight and say to yourself, damn, that 1 point loss, that those couple of drop picks or potential picks on the last drive or a missed throw here, or one play here, you know, I mean, that's the difference in a season. It really can be, and that's the beauty of the NFL. And I guess I have a question for you. Would you rather have it tight the way it is, or would you rather have Green Bay be undefeated and walking away with the division right now?
It's a tricky question because, you know, part of me inside obviously wants them to be undefeated and all that.
Right, but as far as an exciting...
Right, I like it this way. I like the challenge, and I like the fact that we're gonna gain some serious steam going into the latter part of the season. And
in the discussion every week, like you just said, we can look at this every week and dissect it differently after every game, and it's fun. This is why I love the NFL.
Yeah.
There's 16 games, and every single one of them matters. It's not the NBA. It's not Major League Baseball. You don't look back right now and look at the Brewers season and say, oh, and obviously it's because they were awful, but even when they were competitive, you weren't looking back and saying to yourself, oh, that 1 point game that we had a 3 point lead going into the bottom of the ninth, if we would have won that one, we would have been, you know, it just doesn't work out.
Well, even NBA, I was watching, and you know, the Golden State, the super team, whatever you want to call them, they lost their first game post conference. Everyone just said, oh, it's not a big deal. We got 82 games left. That's not a big deal. We got eight, you know, it's like, wow, really? Like that? I think that's ridiculous, and that's why I love college football. That's why I love NFL, because every game dictates your future going ahead. So, I mean, I think it's exciting. I think we're going to continue to see it. It's going to be fun to watch. You know, between Green Bay and Minnesota, just who wins, who doesn't win, how do they look, what are they going to? Who, you know, we're actually going to follow, ladies and gentlemen, Minnesota more than I think any one of us want to. We're actually going to pay attention to what they're doing. And it's fun. You know, I remember the game against, who was it? Who was the guy that, was it Yancey Thigpen? Wasn't it like the Steelers, the guy that intercepted it or something in the end zone, which sent us actually into the playoffs? Something weird like that. And I can't remember for the life of me. I'm sure people are going to listen to this and be like, how do you not remember that? But just those types of things where it literally comes down to the last play of the season to dictate whether or not you make the playoffs. You know, I think that's fun. Obviously, it's nerve-wracking and it's crazy, and you know, we'd rather just know we're going to get into the playoffs. But, you know, that's what makes football football, and that's what makes it so fun. So,
well, and I'll tell you what, I'm not trying to get ahead of myself, but that Christmas Eve game, I don't know if I'm going to have a better Christmas. I don't plan on going to it because I'm going to be with my family and stuff, but if you have a chance to go and you don't have anything going on with your family, or you can take your whole family and you have a chance to go to that Christmas Eve game, Packers versus Vikings at Lambeau, it's going to be something special. It's going to mean something for one team, the other team, or both. And it's just going to be, that's an epic NFL awesomeness. And I can't wait for the season to play out. I mean, I can, because I can't believe damn near half the season is over already. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. Green Bay's starting to look okay. I mean, McCarthy's kind of got his ball rolling. Rodgers did the belt this week. They lost.
Yes.
But just seeing him look like he was enjoying playing again.
Exactly.
He had a smile on his face. Yes. I mean, it was encouraging. To recap the Atlanta game this last week, sucks. But at the same time, I think the arrow is pointing up after a loss for the first time in a long time, and instead of trending downward. And that's encouraging to me. I'm excited about it, and I can't wait to talk to you about this week's game next week.
Yeah, buddy. All right, with that, then we will get going. If you guys listen, we appreciate it. Continue to tune in. Go on iTunes, subscribe to us, leave us some reviews. Make sure and check out The Sweep on Facebook. And keep sending in those questions, people. We love them. We actually did get a question from a buddy, Richard D. King. He asked, who will be holding Super Bowl 51? And you know what, Richard? I'm going to answer for both of us. It will be the Green Bay Packers. Also, follow us on Twitter at @TheSweep_PTTF. Check out our sponsors, Pride and Glory Clothing Company at PrideandGlory63.com for some great one-of-a-kind Packers gear. As always, shout out to the guys at Pack to the Future and the Commander-in-Chief for making it happen. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Blaine, it's been a hell of a time. I will see you next week. Go Pack, go.
Go Pack.
And remember, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Bradford, he lost to Jay Cutler. That sucks. We're out. Later.